Spring flowers and neon green leaves are bursting out in Alaska. Fairbanks recorded their earliest green up ever. Low snow accumulation last winter in South Central and in the interior, coupled with earlier breakup and dry conditions, has fire managers plenty concerned about the current fire danger. There have already been a few fires. Where are the areas of biggest concern in the state, and how can you help protect your property from fire damage? Preventing wildfire is our discussion today on Talk of Alaska Statewide.
Today's program is underwritten in part by First National Bank Alaska, where local knowledge and experience make the difference. We believe in Alaska. Learn more at fnbalaska.com. Equal housing lender, member FDIC.
What can a tiny piece of dust do to you? It can stop you in your tracks. Studies show exposure to dust pollution can cause tightness in your chest, wheezing, and shortness of breath, even if you're healthy. When you're on an unpaved road, drive slowly, especially when operating an ATV. When hauling dirt, cover it up. Do your part, avoid dust, and clear the air. We'll all breathe easier. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, welcome to Talk of Alaska. It's dry in and around Anchorage and lots of other parts of the state. Spring seems early. The lawn got mowed here at the station yesterday, the 2nd of May. Wow. We're talking about the early start to the fire season and what we can all do to avoid starting a fire that can get out of control. The first fire of 2016 was in February near Delta Junction. My guests today are Tim Mowry. Tim is with the State Division of Forestry and is a fire information officer. And with Tim in Fairbanks is Dave Whitmer. He is the assistant manager for the Alaska Fire Service for the Bureau of Land Management. Both Tim and Dave are joining us from the studio of our media partners, KUAC in Fairbanks. Hello.
How you doing, Lori?
Hello.
Good. Thanks for being with me. Also in the studio with me in Anchorage is John C. John is the Anchorage Fire Department forester. And also Sam Albanese with NOAA, National Weather Service, is also here. He's the meteorologist in charge. Hi, Sam.
Good morning. Hi.
And John, hi.
Hi, Lori. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks so much for being here. We've got plenty of voices, and we'd also like to take your calls. If you have concerns and have some questions about what you can do to keep yourself safe this year from the danger of wildfire, our call-in numbers are 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, or if you're calling in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. Tim, I kind of want to start with you and get an overview of the areas of concern across the state. You and I had an email exchange about some of that yesterday. What regions are keeping you up at night?
Well, Lori, as you guys in South Central can probably tell, things are really dry down there. It is starting to green up, but down on the Kenai Peninsula, Mat-Su Valley, Anchorage area, that's our primary concern at this point in the year. That part of the state typically is more receptive to fire earlier than the interior, because spring is usually a little later arriving in the interior, although that doesn't necessarily seem to be the case this year. We did get a good wetting rain here last night and today. In fact, I got home last night and had a half inch of hail in my yard. But and it's really needed here, because things were real dry in the interior as well. We've already had some fires both in the interior and South Central. So and Southwest Alaska out by McGrath and the Yukon-Kuskokwim, that area is also real dry, just as a result of not as much snow this year and just the warm temperatures this winter and the warm spring temperatures.
Well, I'm glad to hear that you got some rain. It keeps looking like it will rain here in Anchorage, but it hasn't. Not much, anyway. I guess there was some rain, Sam says, in Eagle River last night, but boy, I sure haven't seen any in the city to speak of. Tim, you wrote that there's been more than 30 fires this spring. Where were they, and how does this compare to years past? It seems unusually early.
Well, actually, Lori, we've had 87 fires reported this season, and that compares to, I think, 56 last year at the same time. And while we haven't burned as much acreage this year, I mean, the acreage totals are sort of irrelevant at this point. All our fires so far have been pretty small, human-caused fires, which is usually the case at this point in the season. We haven't had really much lightning yet, and so we're just seeing a lot. We're seeing more fires earlier this year than last year. Last year, while it was a record fire, you know, a near record fire season with over 5.1 million acres burned and almost 800 fires, the season really didn't kick off until mid-June when we got a big lightning bust out in south central or southwest Alaska, and we had almost 300 fires start in the matter of a week. But what we're seeing this season, it seems, at least in the state protected lands, is that we're seeing more fires earlier than we have in past years. And that's a trend that we've been seeing for the last few years.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and we're discussing the risk of wildfire this season. My guest today in Anchorage are John C. He's a forester with the Anchorage Fire Department. And also in the studio with me is Sam Albanese. He is the meteorologist in charge with National Weather Service and the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration. And in Fairbanks, Tim Mowry, who is the statewide public information officer for the Division of Forestry, and Dave Whitmer is with the Alaska Fire Service for BLM. Thanks for your participation, and you're welcome to join us also calling in today if you have concerns or you have questions. 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-TALK, in Anchorage, 550-8422, 550-8422, or you can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. This might be a question for you, John C., or Tim. Earlier this spring, I heard that part of the worry about the enhanced conditions for this spring are because of the fact that we had a lack of snow. Not only is there less moisture, but the heavy snowpack that didn't exist, normally it compresses dead, dry debris, and that wasn't the case this year because we didn't have a heavy snowpack, so everything's sort of fluffed up, all the dead stuff. John, talk a little bit about how that changes the concern about how fires could get going if they start.
That's exactly right. From a fire behavior standpoint, compacted fuels actually burn with lower intensity, smaller flame lengths, and the spread rates are slightly slower. So this year, because the grass was not compacted in the leaf litter, we're expecting to see higher flame lengths, more intense fires, but more importantly, that's going to allow these surface fires to transition to the crowns of our spruce trees, torch those trees, and then loft embers downwind and actually aid in the rapid spread of our fires. So that's really, in a nutshell, our concern.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the phones. We have a caller on the line from Bethel. Helen is in Bethel. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your guests and you guys to talk about fire safety. I grew up with six brothers and five sisters, two parents who were very, very pristine in camp, and making sure that fires are totally turned out and not to turn it on when it's windy, and to keep your campsite and your home area safe. And what my dad taught me was to check all the electrical units in your house to make sure you don't overindulge on certain units, and to check your smoke detector and make sure that debris is accumulated and thrown away. And he taught me how to be clean and be fire safety that way, and that's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Helen. Great reminders of the impact that people can have and can make sure that they both responsibly clean up around their campsites and around your home, making sure that debris isn't accumulating so that fires could get started around your home. But I think it's really critical to emphasize that idea of when you're at camp, really making sure that that fire is way out and that there isn't anything left burning there. So thank you for that call, Helen. Sam, what's the role of National Weather Service, NOAA, in helping firefighters prepare for what the season's going to be?
Good question. It's rather extensive, actually. There's a lot of work that's done before the fire weather season even begins to make sure that we're prepared with the forecast, what areas they want the forecast for, defining the critical criteria that they need us to forecast for, setting up a web page that allows them to request what's called a spot weather forecast for specific locations when a fire does get going or if they're planning on doing a prescribed burn. Folks around Anchorage probably noticed yesterday over on J-Bear, they were doing a burn. And we were providing forecast support for that so that they could make sure that they were staying within the requirements of the prescribed burn so that the fire would not burn out of control and they were able to effectively take care of what they needed to. Believe it or not, that's to reduce the fire danger. Some people might, that's kind of counterintuitive. You're lighting a fire so that you can reduce the danger. We produce daily forecasts twice a day for the firefighting agencies, state and federal, that gives them the forecast for the temperatures, the humidity, wind speed, chance of rain, chance of wetting rain, thunderstorm activity levels, so that they're able to pre-plan for the coming day or days to have resources where they think the biggest threat might be. And again, this is all coordinated with the firefighting agency so that we're producing information that helps them. We do fire weather discussions in our daily products that also helps elaborate what's happening. And when the situation does get more critical and there is a fire, like last year we had the Sockeye fire, was probably one of the more notable ones, Card Street down on the Kenai Peninsula. But the Sockeye fire in particular, we had one of my staff go and work at the fire as what's called an incident meteorologist. That's something I used to do much earlier in my career. And what an incident meteorologist does is they're on scene with the firefighting agencies, the responders, providing forecasts specifically for that incident. So the idea there is for the safety of the firefighters, knowing what that fire is going to do, if it's going to blow up, which way the winds are going to blow and push the fire. Those are very critical things when you're fighting a fire. And most of the time, and John can probably speak to this better than I can, when there's fatalities on wildfires, it's usually because the weather did something that they weren't expecting.
John, are there burn bans in place right now in South Central?
Anchorage Fire Department is currently managing burning on a daily basis. So we check the Canadian Fire Danger Rating indices, and as conditions permit, we want to allow outside burning on a limited basis. We're really encouraging people to use the contained devices, their barbecue grills that have covers, fish smokers that are enclosed, and also the devices called chimeneas and portable fireplaces that have a chimney with a screen or spark arrestor, and then the front of the devices are screened. Those are much safer to use when it's as dry as it is and it contains those embers. But there's some really good common sense rules to remind folks, and the most important one is never leave your fire unattended, ever. Even if it's in your backyard, your phone rings, you run inside to answer it, just 2 minutes of distraction is enough for your fire to escape. We advise folks to have a water source ready. Mm-hmm. That can be a hose, garden hose. It can be a portable pump, a firefighter's backpack pump, what we call Fedco. It can be just a bucket of water that's available. And we advise people to have a tool like a rake, shovel, and the firefighter's favorite tool, the Pulaski. Those are all good tools to have. And the other really common sense rule, which our caller from Bethel pointed out, is when it gets windy, and we're talking about 10 miles an hour, so when you start to see the branches sway in the tree above you, it's time to put your fire out to be safe and extinguish it.
All right. If you'd like to join our conversation, the numbers are 1-800-478-8255. That's statewide, 1-800-478-8255, or in Anchorage, 550-8422. 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We're talking about fire safety. Let's get Dave Whitmer in now. He is with the Alaska Fire Service for the Bureau of Land Management. Dave, what's the outlook on federal lands? What's your level of concern, and how are you preparing for what might be, hopefully isn't, but could be a fairly active fire season?
Well, good morning, Lori. Our concerns and our preparation are very similar to the Division of Forestry in a lot of respects. We bring our resources on, our initial attack firefighting resources, which for us, the Alaska Fire Service, is primarily the smoke jumpers. So they've already started their training season this year. We've got what we call the first refresher completed, so we have between two and three loads, airplane loads of smoke jumpers we can put out at any given time. And then once all the refreshers are done for this season, we'll be able to, you know, staff all four airplanes. In addition to that, we have our hotshot crews and our fire specialists that are getting trained up as we speak. And then we are also out with our emergency firefighting forces, getting them trained up out in the rural parts of Alaska, the village crews, as we call them. The early part of your question was, you know, what are we doing for the what are our concerns for the early part of the season? And again, with some of the federal lands we do have down on the Kenai Peninsula and in, you know, south of the Alaska Range, just because of the lack of snowpack and the relatively dry conditions, those are our earliest likelihood areas for fires. However, because we didn't receive that much snow in the interior this year, we're also seeing a much earlier green up than normal. A lot of the areas have come snow-free 2 to 3 weeks ahead of the schedule. So, you know, we've had a few fires occur so far. We had about a 45-acre grass fire out by Huslia a couple days ago. So we're definitely getting close to, you know, having some potential. But as of right now, we haven't seen anything that's actively burning in the spruce. And that's, once we get into the spruce, that's when we really can see a much larger potential. So I think we're doing good for prep, but I think we're on the front end of could be a busy fire season.
How much, you mentioned green up, how much difference does that really make, especially in a season like this where we've got some extraordinary conditions? As we discussed earlier, the lack of heavy snowpack means that the dead, dry grass and weeds and things are sort of fluffed up instead of compacted. Does green up then assist in the way that it normally would in the springtime? How does that impact slowing down burns?
So when I think of green up, I think of it in kind of two phases. There's the trees, which are the most visible and you know, noticeable things that we see greening up. And for us here in the interior, that's occurred largely. And that usually happens first. And then after that, usually by a week or two, then we get the undergrowth, the grasses, the new grasses, the rose bushes, all the underbrush types of things, and that starts greening up. Once that piece, that second piece I talked about, occurs, then we do tend to see a kind of a downturn in fire behavior potential for at least a few weeks. So as John C. mentioned, you know, we get that pre-green up fire potential, and then we get the green up, and that kind of slows us down. And then, you know, by about the middle of May, and we start getting back into more potential with the spruce.
John, this spring is different than past springs in that it's already quite dry. There is some green up. How would you gauge the impact of that this year?
Well, the indicators we watch are are remote automated weather stations, and Anchorage is fortunate to have three of those stations. Actually, there's a couple of extra ones, that one on J-Bear, that we monitor our conditions. We use the Canadian Forest Fire Danger Rating System, borrowed from the Canadians, that gives us a much better perspective on what's going on in what we call our duff layers. That's the vegetation and needle matter that's beneath our spruce stands. And it, a lot of those layers are very thick, and we need to watch how those layers dry. This year, we're already seeing our stations are indicating we're at high to very high fire danger, and we're watching those duff moisture codes climb. And what we're expecting to see is here in a very early time, we're going to see some very high indices indicating that these duff moisture levels are going to start contributing to that fire potential. And also the difficulty, the number of firefighters it's going to take to mop those fires up. And I think that's one of the big things we need to appeal to the public to really help us prevent these human-caused fires, because it's going to take more people this year to put them out, to catch them and mop them up.
Sam, you were talking earlier about J-Bear doing some control burns, and that they were kind of coordinating with you about what the weather conditions were going to be like. If someone wanted to do a controlled burn, maybe they have a really dry patch and they want to get that taken care of in a field, should they call your office, or what's the protocol? And when, I mean, clearly you don't want a windy day and a hot, sunny day. So I imagine that overcast conditions are the best, low winds. But can citizens call in and say, hey, we're kind of thinking about doing this?
Typically, the spot forecast support is for agencies, emergency responders. That's not something that we would even have the capacity to provide a spot forecast to everybody in the general public.
Sure.
What I would tell folks that are in the general public is pay attention to the burn bans. I mean, there is a process in place that John could definitely speak more about than I could. You are required to get permits to do burns like that, typically. It's definitely in the municipality. So if there's a burn ban, you're not going to do that. And as far as what the conditions need to be like for you to be able to ignite your fire, again, that would be part of your burn permit. And where we come into play in that equation is those burn bans are also predicated on what is the weather doing. John will talk to us, the state forestry folks talk to us, and find out not only what has the weather been doing, but what do we expect it to do. And that's part of their decision-making process. If you want to elaborate on that more, John?
Yes, and Division of Forestry has their own burning guidelines, as well as the Alaska Fire Service. But in Anchorage here, we have a burn hotline. That number is 267-5020. And people should call that number before they use fire of any kind. Right now, we have suspended our burning permits, so burning woody debris is not available. We're encouraging people to use the woodlots. And I'm happy to say, as of yesterday, the South Anchorage woodlot is open 7 days a week and should be open the rest of the summer. And they were doing a really brisk business there. Yesterday, there was a load of brush coming in about every 3 to 5 minutes, pickup truck loads of brush. And it's so important for homeowners to get rid of this debris that's around their homes, this home ignition zone, we call it. And that's the place to take it. Don't think about burning this year. It's too dry. Load that brush up. Take it to the woodlot. Eagle River will be open by May 13th. They're contending with two free dump days on the next two Saturdays. Girdwood is open on Saturdays as well. So that's how the municipality is dealing with it. They need to check daily, and I'll defer to Tim for him to explain how forestry manages their open burning.
Tim Mowry in Fairbanks, do you want to jump in here?
Yeah, thanks, Lori. Yeah, the state requires burn permits in all areas of state-protected lands, which pretty much covers the road system. People need a general burn permit if they're going to burn anything that's larger than a three-foot campfire. Campfires you don't need a permit for as long as they're less than 3 feet in diameter. But anything larger than that, you need to get a burn permit, and you can do that at your local forestry office. You can go online to our webpage and print out a permit, and a lot of the local fire departments will issue permits. And anything bigger than 10 feet in diameter, you have to get a large-scale burn permit, and that requires a site inspection from a Division of Forestry representative, prevention officer, and they will come out, look at your setup, tell you what you need to do if all the guidelines aren't being met. And on those permits that we issue, which are free, they spell out all the safe burning requirements that John touched on earlier, you know, having tools and water on site, never leaving a fire unattended, clearing the area around a fire down to mineral soil. And something that's new this year, and it's a pretty big deal, is we are for the first time requiring burn permits for the use of burn barrels. A lot of people in Alaska, especially areas like the Mat-Su Valley that don't have, dumpster stations, transfer sites, people have to take their trash to the dump. And so we get a lot of use of burn barrels in different parts of the state, and they are now, a permit is now required to use a burn barrel. And there are certain requirements that you have to meet to use a burn barrel, having a area around the burn barrel cleared down to mineral soil for 6 feet. That's the big change for us this year, is that we are requiring permits for burn barrels this year. And we have seen, several fires as a result of burn barrels and people not following guidelines, putting their burn barrels on grass, and then it catches the grass on fire, and the fire escapes and, threatens structure or threatens to get into the wildland. So if people follow those guidelines on the permits, I can't guarantee you're not going to have a problem, but your chances of having a problem if you follow those guidelines are pretty slim.
You're really greatly reducing that risk. We are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll continue our discussion about keeping safe and helping to prevent wildfires this season, and take your calls as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from Alaska Pipeline Service Company, Alaska's pipeline to the future that delivers oil today and sustains operations for tomorrow.
Alaska's Tobacco Quitline reminds you that 88% of Alaskans don't allow smoking in their home. A smoke-free environment helps prepare kids for a healthier life and a future free from tobacco. And it makes good economic sense. Secondhand smoke damages property, decreasing its value. Exposure to its toxins lead to disease and increased medical costs. Call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or enroll online at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We are discussing the extreme risk of wildfire danger this season and ways that everybody can help contribute to not having that happen, because we don't want wildfires, except for in areas where sometimes they're useful. how many of the fires this far, Tim, this might be a question for you or Dave, how many have been human caused, and when will lightning come into the equation?
Thanks, Lori. Yeah, every fire we've had this so far this year has been human caused. We have had a little bit of lightning in some parts of the interior, but it's been pretty minimal to this point. All 87 fires that have been recorded this season have been human caused. And lightning Dave might have a better play on this, but lightning usually becomes a factor, enters the equation, typically mid to late May and into June. But he's more of an expert on that.
So yeah, this is that's correct, Tim. The lightning season really, although we are getting lightning at this point, we haven't really, at least to our knowledge, we haven't had any starts as a result of it. But as Tim said, once we get in towards the middle to end of May, typically we start picking up more and more lightning fires. Overall, for Alaska Fire Service protection anyway, the majority of our fires are lightning-caused fires, since most of our protection responsibility is in the remote parts of the state. But again, we haven't seen a whole lot of starts from lightning that we're aware of. Actually, none yet, but we do have one carryover fire in an oil shale seam up there by Eagle that is going on, but I think that's probably wasn't lightning cause. That's just something that's carried over from year to year.
All right, let's go to the phones. Roger is in White Mountain. He has a question about Southeast Alaska. Hi, Roger.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. This is almost like a novelty question. Southeast Alaska around Ketchikan, Sitka, Juneau are well forested and rains are quite common. My question is, has there been any major fires in that region in, say, like the last 100 years? I'll hang up and listen to your response. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Roger. Tim, this is something that when I was asking you where the areas of most concern are in the state, you responded that pretty much all the state except Southeast Alaska is of concern. Can you expand on that and what the prospect is for Southeast?
Yeah, Lori. Well, Southeast Alaska is essentially a rainforest, so yeah, we don't have nearly the fire activity we do in other parts of the state. And I've been doing this just for a couple of years now, and I'm not aware of any large-scale fires in the Southeast off the top of my head, or that I've heard about. Ironically, last year, I believe our first two lightning-caused fires were in Southeast Alaska, but you know, very small fires and just sort of just a freak more than anything else. But yeah, it's usually they get enough rain down there. They don't have typically long extended dry periods that you need to really dry out your fuels. So yeah, Southeast of all the areas in the state, Southeast Alaska is the least worrisome.
All right, well, that's good. At least there's one part of the state that we don't have to have big concerns about this season for fires. Let's go back to the phones. Hank is on the line. Hank, I'm not sure where you're calling from.
Oh, hi. Yeah, I'm Kepler-Bradley area. And my I have a couple questions. One is, I'm 75 feet up from the lake, and I need to clear the brush from going down. But I was wondering, because of the steepness of the hill my home is on, if I should clear further. I lost a roof in 2003 to a wind shear, and I know the wind accelerates when it hits the side of the hill. So I guess one question is, how far should I be clearing? And the second is, I'm on a fixed income, and I was wondering if there are any federal or state grants to help us out with those of us that have limited income. And then lastly, last year, the power line clearers came through, and they left a lot of dead wood all the way down to the private Kepler Park, which is just pure fuel, as far as I can see, for any kind of wildfire. And I was wondering if you guys are kind of work with MEA to see when they do massive cutting, that stuff's cleared out. I'll listen off the air. Thanks.
Thanks, Hank. So he's in Kepler-Bradley, which is in the Palmer area, so in the valley. Yeah. He wanted to know about how much clearing he should do, if there's any assistance that's available, and right-of-way clearing. Do they get that stuff out of there? John, do you want to respond to that?
Well, I'll take part of the question, then maybe Tim can help with sure. What's available in Division of Forestry's protection area. But in Anchorage here, certainly people that are on the hillside or any topographic feature that can include, like, chimneys, we call them, or chutes that would concentrate that wind flow in a channel, those can really accelerate fire behavior. And people do, as Hank pointed out, he's right on the money. We need to extend that home ignition zone or defensible space further down the slope. And typically, our main concern is about 30 feet around the home. When you're on a hill, though, that needs to extend to as much as 100 or even 125 feet as it gets steeper. So the main treatment there is thinning and pruning those trees. Of course, remove all deadfall that's on the ground and prune the lower limbs up 4 to 6 feet above the ground. Here in Anchorage, we're still doing some cost share assistance to homeowners. And right now, their cost share is limited at $500 per homeowner, and it's 50-50. So the homeowner puts a dollar up, and Anchorage Fire Department matches that up to $500 or $2,000 per acre. It's weighted there. So the smaller lots may not be eligible for the full $500. And Tim, I'll let you address what's available in Palmer.
Yeah, thanks, John. The Division of Forestry does have some grant programs through its stewardship program for FireWise work around homes. So I would encourage Roger to contact the Division of Forestry office in Palmer and talk to them about what is available. I'm not sure on the specifics of the grant program. That's something our stewardship foresters work on, but it generally involves clearing, getting money to clear, trees and fuel around homes. And as for the right of way question that he was referring to, I guess my suggestion would be to contact the utility company. See what their plan is, if they have one, to deal with that wood they left behind. And he can also always contact the Division of Forestry offices, and then we can try to work with him as far as it might be a project that we could have a crew work on. Our crews do fuels work with grant monies in different parts of the state and different projects. They typically tend to be more community oriented more than, per homeowner. But he's welcome to call the Division of Forestry office in Palmer and see what's available.
All right. Excuse me. We're going to go back to the phones in our discussion about fire safety. And Jude is in Fairbanks and has a question about the budget, which I had a question about, but I'll let Jude ask it. Hi, Jude.
Hi.
Did you have a question about the budget?
I did. I wondered, perhaps you've heard that the state's going to be financially limited, and I wonder, is most of the budget for the Division of Forestry federal pass-through money, or how does that all work? And if there's an extreme fire season, is it going to make any difference?
Well, that's a good question. I was going to ask something similar. I'm glad that we have both state municipal and federal fire people on with us today. As most Alaskans know, the state is sort of shaking the piggy bank and looking in the couch for money. So how will that impact what may be available for resources this year, both on the state side, but also for the folks in Fairbanks? Both Tim and Dave, maybe you can comment on the federal side as well.
Yeah, Lori. The state has sort of two parts to its budget. We have a preparedness fund, and then we have a suppression fund. And the preparedness fund is basically addresses training and everything we do to prepare for the upcoming fire season. And the suppression fund is more just what it sounds like. That's putting out fires. And typically what we do is when we burn through that suppression fund, no pun intended, we go to the legislature and we'll ask for you know, basically an extension or, you know, more money to deal with the fire. Last year, it's something that we had to do several times because of the volume of fire we had in the landscape. And the budget situation is a huge concern for us. We've lost positions. We downsized our McGrath operation, and last year we had the second largest fire season on record. We're seeing earlier, longer fire seasons, and because of the budget situation, we're not able to ramp up. We should be adding people more than subtracting them, and because of the budget situation, that's not possible. So we have to bring up, you know, as a result, we bring up a lot of resources from the lower 48. Last year, we brought up, you know, I think over 2,500 people from the lower 48 to help to assist with fire suppression in Alaska. And in the end, that's more expensive than using our own folks to do it, because we have to bring them up here. We have to house them, feed them, and we would much prefer to have our own people doing this, but we just don't have the number of people available to meet the demand of, say, last fire season. So, and I'll let Dave talk about the federal side.
Dave Whitmer.
Yes. Okay. So on the federal side, much like Tim explained for the Division of Forestry, we have both a preparedness and a suppression fund as well. We are, you know, it's certainly not an open and blank checkbook, but because it is the federal budget, we do have a little bit more, you know, depth because we're a much larger organization. That being said, our budgets are not going up. We're not taking as drastic of a cut as the state of Alaska has had to recently, but we have over the last couple of years seen a very stable, or I should say flat, maybe slightly declining budget. Hasn't largely impacted our ability to field firefighting resources. But as Tim mentioned, you know, we do get overrun fairly quickly here in Alaska once we get a number of fires. So we do rely heavily on being able to order resources from the lower 48 states and get them up here to assist as needs dictate.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska. We're talking about the concern about wildfire this very dry spring that we're having in Alaska. If you'd like to join us, the number is 1-800-478-8255, 1-800-478-8255. In Anchorage, the number is 550-8422, 550-8422. You can also email us, talk@alaskapublic.org. We do have some email questions that I want to get to. But I also wanted to note that this week, May 1st through the 7th, Governor Bill Walker released an executive proclamation declaring this week Wildland Fire Prevention and Preparedness Week. So it's a good week to be having this conversation. Part of that conversation, John C., I wanted to ask you first, and then maybe some of the folks in Fairbanks could also jump in here, but the situation with spruce bark beetles, we've had a couple of mild winters now. I think their activity ramps up if it's warmer. What's the status of the hillside with both the trees that are already dead? I know that there's been some thinning efforts that have gone on up there. What's going on up on the hillside right now? And is it known what the activity level is for these beetles?
Well, the state of Alaska actually monitors the insect activity. However, I'm out there doing the home inspections door to door, basically. And I can tell you towards the end of last season, we did start to notice quite a few more homes with homeowners calling us about bark beetle activity. And I made a number of calls in certain areas of Anchorage here, where one gentleman had four or five beetle-killed trees on his lot. So we're definitely seeing the activity ramping up. We're advising homeowners that have high-value trees, it may be time to think about preventive spraying, which keeps the beetles from entering those trees. And it's necessary to spray them every other year. The tree service companies can help give advice and inspect those trees, and also let homeowners know what kind of insect activity is around them. And that's something that the state, with their monitoring activity, they can also share where some of those hot spots are. And I know the Kenai Peninsula and the Mat-Su Valley also has reported some additional activity.
Tim or Dave, did you want to add anything to that about the statewide concern for spruce bark beetles?
Lori, another area that was hit by spruce bark beetles was the Copper River Basin. They had a large outbreak there years ago, and so they have a lot of trees that were killed as a result of that. And basically, those dead trees are fuel, and it takes fuel for a fire. So any spruce bark beetle activity, is a concern. And the warmer weathers, the warmer winters. I'm not an insect expert, but I know they do better when it's warmer.
Sure.
The more dead fuel that's out there, the bigger the concern for us.
All right, let's go to the phone. Stu is in Muldoon and has a comment about the FireWise booklet. Hi, Stu.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. In the FireWise booklet that the state's handing out, there's a photo of people using a silver, I'm assuming it's fireproof tarp, on a very small cabin. And being a remote small cabin owner, I was wondering, what's the record with that kind of material usage? Has that actually saved cabins in the past, or is it just kind of like a last-ditch measure to do something before you got to get out of Dodge because the fire's right there?
John, I'm glad that Stu brought this up, because you and I, in an earlier conversation, you had mentioned that people actually ask for a FireWise workshop. That's one of the concern levels that
yes.
citizens are having. And you had good attendance. 50 people showed up. What do you cover in those workshops? And then let's get to Stu's question about, is there such a thing as a fireproof tarp that you can put on your roof?
Well, the solutions are the FireWise home inspections, really, to prepare persons' property in their homes. We go in and inspect that home ignition zone, and virtually 100% of the homes we inspect have things that need to be done. People need to move wood piles. They need to rake leaves out from under their decks and surfaces that overhangs that accumulate leaves and grass and whatnot. But the other things that people can really do are to use the wood lots, get the material hauled away. And we have certain people that are at the end of very long one-way in, one-way out roads. Some of those neighborhoods in Anchorage are like Stuckagan Heights, Bear Valley, and the residents in those communities need to be especially concerned, because their escape routes may be compromised early in an initiating wildfire. They really need to have good defensible space, and that always leads to questions about things that are available, like foam. There are some gel products out there, and the wrap material you mentioned is actually the fire shelter material that comes on a roll. And I'm going to have to defer to, I'm going to ask Dave Whitmer to comment on this. We have used these materials with some success in the past. Mainly, we've used them on our larger incidents to protect valuable historical cabins and things of that nature. Typically, the homeowner's best line of defense, though, is creating this defensible space, and then when they're told to evacuate, they need to be prepared and leave when we advise them to.
All right. Dave Whitmer, before we get a comment from you about this, we're going to take just a short break here as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Talk of Alaska comes to you from APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network, and is made possible with support from BP Alaska. As part of their commitment to Alaska, BP and their employees are investing in over 400 education and service organizations and communities across the state. More at alaska.bp.com. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration set standards for the operation of aircraft and airports and provide services to the flying public. Passengers are influential in making flying safer in Alaska. When passengers know their rights and responsibilities, aviation is safer for everyone. Safety information online at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation.
Welcome back to Talk of Alaska. We're talking about fire danger awareness. Dave Whitmer, did you want to comment about this fire-resistant material that people could maybe put on their roofs?
Sure, Lori. You know, to address Stu's question there, you know, how effective it is and how does it work? We do use that. As John mentioned, it is a fire shelter material, essentially, that's highly reflective. And the application we most use it in up here in interior Alaska is out on a lot of the more remote sites where we have cabins where we're not actually trying to put the fire out. We're just trying to protect the site. And so we will do a lot of prep work around the cabin if the cabin owner hasn't already done that. But that's, you know, I guess I want to reiterate that need. We really do want homeowners and cabin owners to be taken care of the immediate defensible space around their property. That makes our job much more likely to be successful. But if we have that space built in there, or we can get it built in there, then we do use this cabin wrap material, and it we cover up everything we can, the walls for sure, any openings, the roof if we have enough material, and then if we also have the time and the resources, we'll try to put a pump with a sprinkler system to further assist in keeping fire away from the structure. And we're largely successful in that. It's not a guarantee every time, but it is something that has worked fairly well for us in the past.
I'm going to combine a couple email questions that have come in. One was from someone who wanted to know, if you're in a cabin and you have access to a pump and a fire is coming your way, is it advisable to start a back burn to try to help salvage your place? And then another question about, if we see unsafe burning happening in our neighborhoods or cabin areas, who should we report it to? So who wants to take that idea of a back burn near a cabin?
Hey, Lori, it's Dave in Fairbanks. I'll take first crack at that one, and then maybe others can weigh in. That's a tool we use. They call it either back burning or burning out, that we really, really want to caution anyone against doing. It's a gamble sometimes. It's under controlled situations. It is an effective tool, but we certainly don't want individual property owners out there doing that, mostly from a safety, about entirely from a safety perspective. Once you put fire on the ground and you can no longer control it, it gets away from you fast. So we really want to be cautious about how we approach that. Probably one of the biggest concerns would be if you thought that was your last ditch and you did put fire on the ground and didn't know that there was somebody out there coming your way to try to help you, you could really compromise their safety as well. So we try to tell everybody we talk to, leave that up to the firefighting crews. They'll do the best they can with that tool if it's needed. But we really caution against anyone just lighting a backfire.
Sure. John C., did you want to get in there?
Just an additional note there. The fire environment that in an approaching wildfire is non-survivable, basically. It's, temperatures can be in the range of 1,200 to 1,500 degrees right around a person's home or cabin. So the safest place is going to be inside of that structure until that main fire front passes. That extreme temperature generally is 90 seconds to maybe as much as 2 minutes or more. And if people are stuck, they are unable to evacuate, stay in your shelter. And at some point, you want to get out if you have water and the capability to put fires that may have started the side of your structure on fire. That would be the time after that fire front has passed.
We do have some links and information at our website, alaskapublic.org, for folks. You can go there and find some phone numbers and information about more FireWise info that you might need. Sam Albanese with National Weather Service. I wanted to get you back in here and just get a comment about how far out you can sort of look at what the conditions may be. I know that forecasting is kind of difficult when you get out more than, I don't know, a few days or a few weeks. It gets kind of to be guesswork at some point. Yeah. But what are you seeing? What's the outlook as far as you can and see it for Alaska for this spring and summer as far as danger of fire? I know that the National Interagency Fire Center has Hawaii, Alaska, and the Southwest as areas in the nation of the most concern this mm-hmm. year.
Well, I mean, in the normal forecast process, the next few days, we have a pretty good degree of accuracy within the scope of what we're trying to forecast. We do weekly outlooks, 2-week outlooks, when we have calls with the state emergency operations center to kind of elevate anybody's level of preparedness and awareness. And then our climate prediction center does do seasonal outlooks, and those go out that beyond that 2 weeks to 1 month and then to 3 months. And obviously, the further out that you're going, the less accurate the forecast is going to be. And also, the thing that it needs to be understood with especially the seasonal outlooks and the monthly outlooks is that information is very broad and general. I want to caution people when you see the Climate Prediction Center's seasonal outlook, and they're saying that we have a higher probability of being above normal in our temperatures and also above normal in our precipitation. Well, when you consider normal precipitation for Alaska this time of the year is virtually anything measurable. So if like that shower that hit Eagle River last night, that put us above normal. Mm-hmm. Just one shower.
Right.
So understand the context of what you're looking at, and that's where we work with the agency so that they understand that as well.
All right. Well, it's hard to believe, but we're at the end of the show. John C., before we go, in just a couple of seconds, we had a question about why are fireworks still allowed in Alaska's outlying areas? Are fireworks being allowed right now anywhere?
That's a tough question, but definitely not within the municipality. There are some areas on private land out around Houston that okay. It is allowed.
Thank you. Thanks to my guests, and thanks to you for listening to Talk of Alaska today.
Talk of Alaska is made possible by this member station of the Alaska Public Radio Network.
What can a tiny piece of dust do to you? It can stop you in your tracks. Studies show exposure to dust pollution can cause tightness in your chest, wheezing, and shortness of breath, even if you're healthy. When you're on an unpaved road, drive slowly, especially when operating an ATV. When hauling dirt, cover it up. Do your part, avoid dust, and clear the air. We'll all breathe easier. This message sponsored by Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation. Alaska Pacific University delivers a distinctive education grounded in real-world experience with life-friendly schedules designed to support your personal and professional goals. Apply now for fall 2016 and find out more about APU's Promise Tuition Grant and other scholarships at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
This program is a production of APRN, which is solely responsible for its content. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of APRN, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. CD copies are available by calling 550-8400.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.